Blog Talk Radio.
You cannot get rid of tyranny by fighting tyrants, for a very good reason. Tyranny doesn't exist independently of something else, which is more important. There is a something else which has to be defined before you know what tyranny is. What's that? It's opposite. Freedom.
Get a friend. Get informed. Get involved. We are not cattle radio.
Yeah, good evening, everybody, and welcome to We Are Not Cattle Radio. I am your host, Jake Counts, coming to you live from, home of the Walking Dead, Sonoya, Georgia. We have been put on the map, which kind of sucks because I wanted to live in a small town with not a bunch of people. And we're getting a bunch of people migrating in here. But, hey, that works. Everybody likes a little bit of the country life, I guess. So anyway, we are live, and joining me tonight, not unexpectedly, but didn't want to broadcast his appearance, will be Josh Wiley of the Journalistic Revolution and One Step Beyond Me, and the future homesteader up there in Michigan trying to live the free life. How dare you? What do you think? This is a free country. So on the show tonight, we're going to talk about a little bit of riots in Baltimore and actually some solidarity popping up all across the country, whether it's in Philadelphia, New York. People are starting to take notice. The black community is not taking notice. They have noticed this for a very, very long time. It's just actually become part of the mainstream now. Wait a minute. Are you telling me that agents of the state might actually kill people for unruly purposes? Get out of here. That only happens in the movies. Nah, not when some guy goes to grab a taser and then runs away and some dude just jacks half a clip into him. That never happens. Oh, that was for a traffic stop. I think it was on child support the guy didn't pay. So, once again, the idea of the state being the intermediary is showing why the Founding Fathers actually had some good sentiments. Although they were aristocrats, we will admit that, and slave owners, so we're not saying that these were all good people, but they came from the most oppressive, barbaric empire you could ever imagine and decided, hey, there are a couple of firewalls that we could put in here. You guys are probably never going to keep this, but we're going to give you an idea of what it would be like to be free, like, you know, being able to protect yourself and your person, your effects, and, you know, not be spied on and, you know, that kind of stuff. Which is all gone. So, hooray! And I got a new clip on my soundboard here. I'm very excited about it. So I what would we call? Hold on a second. Let me pull up my guest here. As I'm sitting here bogarting the mic, Josh Wiley, are you there, sir?
I am. It's wonderful to be on with you this evening, Jake. How you doing?
I'm doing well. So before we get going, why don't you go ahead and run your backup recording? Because we know how it works. Sometime in the internet's community, every time you come on the show, we have a recording issue.
So I'm one step ahead of you on that front, man.
You know what? It's a beautiful thing, isn't it? So we just briefly, I started out, for those of you that tune in, and we have new people tune in every week, and I do appreciate that. I'm not as vigilant as I have been in the past, mainly because I have a and I'm not making excuses. I have a real job now and a toddler, so that makes life a little bit difficult. And so I'm not able to dedicate my time to the show like I would like to, but now I'm starting to get to the point where the toddler is able to do stuff on her own, and I'm getting a little bit more free time so that actually produces better quality medium for everyone else that tunes in. So I started out as a, I was awakened to the paradigm of fake money about 6 years ago, branched off from that into understanding what libertarianism was. Always thought I was a libertarian because I thought that Democrats and Republicans were both silly. Like, I never understood why I could, not be for abortion but be for, you know, equal rights. So I never understood that and how I had to fit into a little box. So I started doing some reading and researching, and I stumbled onto Alex Jones, and that awoken me to geopolitics, which then pushed me into other ideas and spectrums, like reading Brzezinski's work and reading how we actually got here through propaganda. Yes, that's an actual book title. You guys should probably check it out. and Public Relations, which is another book title that you should all probably check out as well. And so once you get into this idea in this world that we run into, and you see that it's all noise for the most part, the media is there to distract you. It is all one giant cluster. Well, we'll just call it a clusterfuck. And then we had this thing called liberty way back when. It was about 200 years ago. We had like a little semblance of it, like a little, just like a little piece. It was really nice. We had a lot of growth. And then I looked into what happened, why we had no growth, and that was because we involved the central bank. And so a central bank comes in, and who runs a central bank? And so I started asking questions. And then we get to the point where we are today, which would be best described by these little phrases right here.
System of government characterized by extreme dictatorship.
Oh, I see. It's fascism.
Fascism. Wonderful.
Yes, we are in a fascistic state, everyone. And now you're getting to reap the benefits with guys in black masks and uniforms that look like stormtroopers shooting rubber bullets at people. And yes, Baltimore, I do realize you had peaceful protests for a couple of days. And then you figured out that the only way that people actually paid attention is if you start breaking stuff. And that's kind of the protesters' fault, but it's also kind of the media's fault. But then again, why are we relying on the media? So that is my 30-second synopsis of where I've come from, why I'm here now. And I'm here to give you a different side of the story from a non-biased perspective. Look, we're just trying to figure out what we're doing on this big flying rock out in the middle of space anyway. And I'm still trying to figure out why we got all these weapons that could blow our existence to kingdom come. And we've got Hadron Colliders that could actually develop black holes and suck us all into Never Never Land. But you know what? It's really important right now, Josh. I'm shocked that you actually came on board tonight because you should be watching the NFL draft like a real American right now.
Oh, see, I got through about seven people, and then my attention was drawn towards the Kansas City Royals Detroit Tigers series starting off tonight, and then I realized that there were actually important things going on in the world other than watching grown men play children's sports games. So here I am.
All right, so we got a lot to get into. Diesel D, we see you on the line. We'll get to you here in a minute. Thanks for calling in. And feel free to call into the show, everyone. Dial in number is 602-753-1916, and we just lost him. So you can give us a buzz back in here in a few minutes if you want. We're going
to
be talking.
Maybe you scared him away, and he was just calling in to listen.
Listen, I mean, come on. You can't take calls in the first few minutes, and you're just kind of getting my rhythm and flow here. I mean, I haven't done a show in over a week and a half. Give me a little bit of slack here. You know what? I should have taken his call because I'm interested to see what everybody calls in about, and it's probably about Jade Helm. So let's go. Where do you want to cover first, man? Do you want to cover the riots in Baltimore? Got plenty of clips on that. It's some good stuff. Let's start there. So I haven't played any of these clips for you because I wanted to kind
You're
of
leading the witness, Jake.
You know what? I really should stop doing that. I mean, I'm terrible about that when it comes to interviews. I've done many interviews. I've gotten really good about just asking one simple question and then shutting up. And there I kind of screwed it up. So let's get a little background here. Let's talk about the Baltimore crime rate and why all of this stuff is a little bit well, of course, Windows cannot open my file right now. Hold on a second. Sorry, I saved this in a funky format. So, ladies and gentlemen, bear with me. We are having technical difficulties as usual. This is end-user error, by the way, or ID10T error for any of those keeping score at home that are my fellow nerds. So, we are having some... Oh, now, nice. Now my scan pops up. That's great. Sorry. All right, we're going to skip that one. So we'll come back to that in a second. So, Josh, let's talk about what we were talking about right before we jumped on the show. Let's give these people some space, man. Let's just give them a little space.
Space to destroy, Jake? Is that what you're getting at here?
We also gave those who wished to destroy space to do that as well.
Yes, you got to give people space to destroy. So this is kind of par for the course. If you've ever followed any kind of riot in the United States over the past, 5 years, it's the mantra that we've got to let these people just kind of, blow off some steam, and then I got a really good clip that I want to play for you here in a second. So what do you think of that, Josh? I mean, what does that mean, give these people some space to destroy?
Oh, my goodness. Every time I hear that phrase, I guess I'm just harkened back to, a simpler time, you know, in the 1960s, but specifically, you know, the late mid to late 60s. Mm-hmm. Of course, the 67 Detroit race riots come to mind, given my geographical location currently. I guess this was an age in which the fomenting of destruction and the kind of acceleration of it over the course of, I guess, a couple of weeks during those race riots before George Romney, that name should sound familiar to people, called in the National Guard and started just shooting people ad hoc. These were organic riots in the truest of sense. In the truest sense, it started as essentially a protest at a speakeasy in a Detroit basement, in which, depending on whose side you're listening to, the one that I kind of fall down on goes as such: a couple of Detroit officers.
Sorry, I got the file to play in the background as you were speaking. Continue, man.
Oh, don't sweat it. Well, a couple of Detroit officers came into a blind pig in Detroit that was essentially serving liquor past 2 a.m. and decided to rough up an individual of color. And whatever happened in that basement that night, no one will really know. All we know is that those officers left that night and two African-American men were shot to death, which sparked one of the largest race riots in American history. And now that we fast forward to today, a very similar scenario. You know, of course, Jake, we've both seen The Wire, a series that kind of displays the sheer police brutality of most American cities today, but Baltimore in particular, which is an incredibly corrupt city. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say, and I guess we're going to get into this a little bit more this evening, but whether or not these are organic protests as they were in the 60s, or if they've been kind of fomented, because as I'm sure you know, Jake, there are these stories happen in the black community, I would say, on a weekly basis across this country. So you really have to ask the question, why are these particular stories, you know, last year in Ferguson, now this one in Baltimore, why are these specific stories now getting national coverage when they've been happening for essentially almost 100 years in this country?
I would agree. Now, here, now that I've got this is actually a pretty good segue. So I've got the other clip uploaded here. So let's talk about the history of Baltimore to an extent and why we could kind of draw some conclusions to this information we're about to be given. For why these riots are all happening.
And demanding peace.
My message is that this is our city, that we have to live here.
We will have order, and we will have peace.
This is the image they want more Americans to see. A black mother pulling her teenage son from the crowd of street thugs after spotting the young man on live TV.
As we entered this city, you could smell the fire in the air, and all night long it was the sound of fire alarms and sirens, one after another. Police had,
which is actually better than what it was in Ferguson. It was the sound of tear gas and gunshots. So, yeah, whatever.
Having so much trouble keeping up with this. The calls for peace not being heeded so far.
Thanks to Steve for that. I want to bring in our senior justice correspondent, Pierre Thomas, right now. And Pierre, we know now the National Guard coming into place, hoping for calm today. But there has been some criticism of Baltimore officials for not calling out the police in force fast enough.
Yes, good morning, George. There will be some Monday morning quarterbacking on whether they had enough officers out on patrol given Freddie Gray's funeral yesterday. Tensions were going to be high despite the calls for peace. Did the police move quickly enough to stop those stores from being looted? But they were clearly in a difficult position once people started throwing rocks and bricks. It was a dicey situation, George.
Okay, so I'm going to cut it right there, and I'm going to go to this article, and then, Josh, I want to get your take. So this came out today. And Josh, you and I are going to elaborate on this because this is what happens. Maryland sheriff traveled to Baltimore to help law enforcement. This was from the Baltimore CBS, Baltimore. And this is funny how the media always acts surprised when this kind of stuff happens. was going to stop the riots. He told the fan to stun, and when officers alerted him of their orders to stand down. Imagine that. Orders to stand down. So I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. I plan to go to Baltimore and all that. I watched the events unfold on Saturday night, like we all did, and I was very concerned about what I saw and the lack of response on Saturday night. He said, and this is where it gets kind of creepy, because I don't like a police or a sheriff ever talking like this, because it sounds like he's ready to go to combat, and it really creeps me out. I immediately rallied up the troops, and we made sure our MRAP was prepared and ready. We were assigned to protect the Baltimore Police Headquarters to East Fayette Street, blah, 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 and we maintained our post all night until we were relieved. But what shocked him, he said the most, is the police told him not to confront and accost the rioters. Wow, I'm going to just leave it there. So, Josh, imagine that. The government tells people to stand down so rioters can get a little bit out of control, and then you have the justification for a couple of things. What's your takeaway? I've got my thoughts. What's your takeaway from that?
Well, Jake, I think that this is both on the tip of both of our tongues, so I'm just going to come out and say it. This seems to be almost a deliberately fomented pretext for some kind of martial law experiment.
It's not martial law when you have troops on the street and when you have curfews at 10 o'clock where nobody can go out. That's not martial law. I mean, and when all this stuff is shut down and when you got people going out to protest after the curfew is set and they get thrown into Humvees by a bunch of guys in army fatigues. That's not martial law. I want you to understand that. Okay, so continue.
Well, I guess, at the very least, a police state. But to the credit of the
totally facetious by that point.
I'm aware. But to the credit of the protesters, it seems that this is kind of the plan to goad these people into violent actions. And this happened to a certain extent over the weekend, and then cooler heads have seemed to prevail since then. Yeah. And they've kind of been the establishment has kind of been stymied in that respect in terms of getting these state police MRAPs out onto the street, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, we know what the real cause of all this stuff is, Josh.
The real
cause of all of the heartaches and all the riots and all the physical animosity towards the police is obviously the veterans.
I mean, we talk about training. We talk about having officers. I was talking to a city councilman here last week who was saying, Brooke, these people have to live in the communities. There's no emotional or there's a lack of emotional investment.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these young people, I mean, I've been talking about this so much. A lot of these young people, and I love our nation's veterans, but some of them are coming back from war. Mm-hmm. They don't know the communities, and they're ready to do battle.
Yeah, they definitely need training, better training.
So the veterans, Josh, are coming home to do battle. How many times in the last year and a half have you and I said that this looks like the federal government trying to goad people in order to maintain the moral authority or the moral high ground and to start shooting at state officers?
Jade Helm 15. All
the Jade Helm nonsense, too, here in a minute.
More times than I can count, Jake, unfortunately. And I guess to a certain extent, that clip is correct. There are veterans in this country who are looking to confront the establishment in a meaningful way. They're veterans of the drug war, I would say. But yep. I guess that's a conflict that's currently not recognized by the state. At least one side of that conflict is not recognized by the state.
No, and then you look at the way that that Baltimore is kind of digressed, and it was really well done at, you know, to... We'll have to do a breakdown on this, like a series breakdown, and we'll do a roundtable. So if anybody wants to be part of the roundtable discussion, I'll only take the first five people that contact me. We're going to do a roundtable discussion about The Wire and what it really does portray to the American people, all the different nuances to it, because that's really art imitating life. And Josh, you and I have talked many times about the people that actually made that documentary series almost documentary series about what their relationship was, you know, to Baltimore. And it's very, very telling that when you have a drug war that has failed, and what the drug war does is it gives people in an impoverished community kind of a way out. You know, when I interviewed Freeway Ricky Ross, that's what he talked about. He didn't see it as pushing drugs and hurting people. He saw it as a way out of the hood. And people, when you're put into a situation that you're financially, you know, strapped, you have no way to go, you have no upward mobility, the people of privilege that just say go out and get a job, well, that's kind of impossible. Because these guys are not really given a fair shake. They're not really given good education. They're being taught slave training in school through the Prussian system of education. And then they're thrust into a society where they have to live in the black market. And then you create a counterbalance to the black market by creating a militarized police force that has this idea that, you know, we're fighting the war on drugs, and it gives the police, even when you say things like that, using the terminology a war on drugs, and then you give police militarized equipment, militarized uniforms, now you're really kind of playing into that word game. And as you and I know, Josh, grammar has a lot to do with how humans perceive information and how humans perceive reality.
You're telling me, man, you start calling something a war, people are going to start treating it like one. Bunny Colvin, season 3. I mean, but you bring up an excellent point as well in terms of, you know, I guess the job market and trying to get these people what would be, you know, deemed as quote-unquote good tax-paying positions within society.
Sell an aircraft carrier and give some people in Baltimore, like, some cash?
I guess Yeah, I mean, if the military industrial complex could get kids at 12 like the drug game does, I'm sure they'd be doing it by now. Unfortunately for them, we do have some rules as to when you can sign up to be a soldier and go murder people for the Anglo-American establishment. But there's an excellent example of that, Jake. You know, Duquan Williams in season 5 of The Wire. Where he spends a good 2 episodes essentially trying to get gainful employment because he doesn't want to be on the streets. And
right.
Everywhere he goes, that's what people don't understand. We have minimum employment age laws in this country, for the most part, that are set at 16. And when the drug game is getting these kids at, you know, 10, 12, sometimes as young as 8 years old, if you're going to be a hopper, if you're going to be a drug runner, you know, as a corner boy, then you're doing it at such a young age that even the kids who want to get jobs, they go to these you know, local shoe stores or a drug store, and they say, sorry, kid, we can't hire you because you're 14 and we have minimum age requirements. Sorry, but get back on that corner and start. That's what one of the employees deliberately says to this kid. Get back on that corner, sling for a couple more years, and then come back and see us later.
Right.
Pathetic.
So society isn't as cut and dry as the mainstream media would like to make it seem, and the media in general, and just people that aren't really thinking. You have to think past your nose in order to come to these conclusions, and that we have serious problems with inner cities, and the reason that we have serious problems with inner cities is because the money does not go to things that stimulate an economy and stimulate society. It goes to things like the drug war. It goes to things like the military-industrial complex. It goes to things like the security industrial complex like we have now. And so now we're running into a whole new idea of what society and what an economy should be. And just a local headline today, Josh, in a local investigative journalist found that the head of this organization here in Georgia, and I don't want to name names because it hasn't all been vetted out yet, but the head of this organization in Georgia, who was friends, imagine this. This is your atypical, you know, good old boy handshake scenario. She's friends with the departing governor. She gets this position in high office. She makes about $160,000 a year. She brings in 8 other people from outside to be, you know, part of her little cabinet or whatever, and they all get paid $130,000 a year. She starts using government credit cards to fly back and forth to these events, and she starts using a government car even on the weekends. So it's this idea that, oh, I've made it, I'm in government, when that's the exact opposite of what this country was founded on. You literally took America and we have flipped it on our heads, where working for the government is the safest job that you can ever have because it's never going to go broke, because the Federal Reserve is always going to bail it out, and it just becomes this unbelievably large bubble that's going to burst eventually. I'm not going to sit here and doom and gloom you and say that it's going to happen tomorrow or 5 years now from 10 years from now, but we have to do something to just step back and say, wait, okay, this is the result. This is obviously the effect. What's the cause of all this stuff? And the cause of a lot of it has to do with the fact that our priorities are extremely jacked up. Hey, we're an empire. Look at every empire throughout history. Whether it's the German Empire through the Nazis, that's the most recent one that we can actually put a finger on and say, well, what happened to them? Well, they ran out of money. They ran out of raw materials. You know, they ran out of a lot of different things. But why did that happen? Well, it was because that you were siphoning off every resource that you could to go towards war. And now America has got it perfected into the fact that they don't let you see the war that goes on. They don't let you see the kids dying. They don't let you see the massacres. They don't let you see the murders. They don't let you see the UN go in and wipe out a whole village for, you know, a environmental whatever, you know, safe zone or easement or whatever the hell they want to call it. It's all protected, and you get to watch all this other distractionary shit while all of your money, I think it's, what is it, 40 cents on the dollar goes to the military now? So every
something like that.
Yeah, so there's your problem, people. We're going around the world with, I mean, granted, you know, aircraft carriers and stuff like that's cool. I mean, if you want to be living on the streets, we might have to think of a better way to spend our money. And the first thing to do would be revamping the education system, and not through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that just wants to sell damn, you know, computers and software to people that doesn't even work. I mean, we've got to come back and we got to really start looking at the trivium. We really got to start looking at, you know, doing things as a community and then building from there, because now what we're doing is we're all just kind of sitting around waiting for government to do something, and it's never going to happen. So go ahead,
The Carnegie Endowment or the Bill Melinda Gates Foundation or the Ford Foundation, you know, all of these kind of Rockefeller Foundation is another. I mean, speaking to what you were saying earlier, though, you know, it's like don't let that revolving door hit you on the way out, you know. But, Jake, okay. I think a lot of the problem stems from the fact that we have essentially a sedated populace that, for the most part, refuses to accept that America is an empire, despite the fact that Karl Rove can stand on national television and blatantly tell people that, yeah, we're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality, and you're just going to watch whatever reality we create for you, and you're going to be complacent because you're dumb, because we've dumbed you down through these foundation-funded educational systems and the Prussian system of education that these things are founded on. You know,
Wait, before everybody calls us conspiracy theorists, ladies and gentlemen. That's all in the congressional record, by the way.
Indeed it is. If people are interested, you should look up something called the Reese Commission, or the Reese Committee, excuse me. Norman Dodd was the chief investigator.
Yes, sir.
No, yeah, you can look up G. Edward Griffin had an interview with Norman Dodd right before he died. Very interesting set of interviews if people are actually interested in that. But just to kind of put a cap on this Baltimore issue, Jake.
Yeah.
I think the saddest part is, you know, there's so many issues here. There's the drug war. There's the militarization of the police. There's the fact that, you know, a good segment of Americans who don't yet experience what the black people and Hispanic communities of Baltimore are now experiencing, but will experience in due time due to crippling poverty, right, as you're forced into the black market as well. It's that so much of black America, you know, to a certain extent rightfully, but Malcolm X did his life story and the story of the Black Panthers, the real Black Panthers, kind of outlines this saga in which, you know, Malcolm X, you know, raved against the white establishment for so many years and then came to see quite correctly that it's not really all white people. Most white people are largely kind of ignorant in their wealth and their hubris.
Right.
But it's this small cadre of elites throughout that aren't specifically American, that are internationalists, who truly are neo-eugenists and have it out for the black community and truly do want to depopulate this earth and have no warm place in their heart for black America. And it's this cadre of eugenists, again, from places like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who spread their genetically modified food and vaccines throughout Africa and India for love, I'm sure, Jake, right? That we could unite against, you know? Yeah, I know, right? But it would do the world, but specifically this country, so much good for, you know, the quote-unquote right-wing patriot movement and, you know, the black activists of today, despite the fact that we see very different kind of visions of social organization or lack thereof for the future, to unite on these core issues and say, look, here's the problem right here. It's this core of neo-elite that have fostered themselves throughout the ages that are trying to kill all of us in various ways, shapes, and forms, trying to bleed all of us out through our food supply, through our medicine, through our lack of industrialization in this country, Baltimore being an excellent example of a deindustrialized city, and really come together on these issues. But we're kept so divided, Jake, that I know that I'm preaching to the choir on this one, but it really is sad to watch it happen.
Well, we got new listeners every week, and people probably don't hear this a lot. I mean, you may hear it in, like, broken format through Alex Jones's rant and ravings and selling you nutraceuticals that you can basically make for yourself. But it's very, very true. But the idea that we're coming to here, like exactly what you said, and we can go back to The Wire and look at the way that, you know, they were talking about the harbor. Remember, the whole season two was about the deindustrialization of Baltimore, about how they were going to remove this harbor and they were going to move all these other shipping exports to some other place. And that's what we're seeing. It's globalism. These people don't give a fuck about you, everybody. And I'm sorry to be profane, but guess what? It's time to be profane, because as you can see, they are starting to do what they do in every nation state around the world. It is a playbook. Read Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I mean, read the damn Rockefeller Foundation's papers. Holy cow. You'll see.
Prospects for a New America is an excellent one on that front.
I mean, Jesus, people, they line it out for you, but it's an academic, you know, BS. So you got to kind of read between the lines, but it's like, oh my God, look at these jokers. You know, it's like the white paper that I read not too long ago that talked about the surveillance state that I've brought up like a thousand times on here, just because it's the one that pops out. And it's like, well, here are the four different options. And the very first one is the one that they're going for. It's like, well, it could end up as a totalitarian police state where we spy on you and track everything you do and monitor you and grab you with black uniforms and stuff like that. That's one scenario. And here's the other, and the other three are all like nice and rosy and peachy keen. And then when you see that stuff and you look and you, like you said, Josh, you read the policy papers, not just listen to the talking heads, you go, holy crap. And the people that are probably writing these policy papers, Josh, do you think that they are as in tune to the overall scenario, or do you think that they're just writing it as an academic and, you know, fulfilling or checking off one of their boxes?
Oh, of course it's the latter, Jake. You know, the Council on Foreign Relations is largely just a group of talking heads that kind of, you know, syndicate the worst of the worst, a literal cacistocracy within society. When you have inner core groups like the Trilateral Commission or the Pilgrim Society, which, you know, people don't know nearly enough about, these are the people that are kind of, you know, the hidden hand directing some of these ideas and cherry-picking the very worst of them. Yeah, much like transhumanism, Jake, where the hard sell, of course, is, oh, we're going to genetically engineer humanity to be cancer and disease-free, you're all going to get your free Iron Man suit, and we're going to conquer mortality. And, of course, the other side of that is the people saying, well, hold on a second, well, maybe this technology could actually be used to, you know, track human beings everywhere they go and monitor their thoughts and you know, kind of create this neo-feudal technocracy. Right. But those people, of course, are conspiracy theorists, Jake, and they deserve no credence within society.
No, and then what happens is you have people that really do care about humanity, like Stephen Hawking and other top, you know, physicists come out and go, hey, this AI stuff that you guys are building, they're probably going to kill us all. So we should probably really sit down and think about it. But then what happens is you get the combine, and you know this with the Manhattan Project. You get the combine going with all different little facets, and nobody knows what anybody else is doing. That's what's so funny is that Americans are, and I'm going to call you out, Americans, if you can read and research what happened during the Manhattan Project, you had 200,000 people working on a freaking bomb that nobody knew was going to happen. Nobody. They're like, well, I'm just working on this trinket over here. Well, I mean, there's my widget. I built it. Okay, well, send it off. Like, listen, a conspiracy can occur on a mass scale, and you have to come to grips with that. You have to come to grips with the fact that the media is there to distract you. You have to come to grips with there that popular culture is there to put you in a little box and just pat you on the head and say everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. Meanwhile, they pull a knife out behind your back and just keep patting you on the head. Everything's just going to be it's going to be fine. I promise you. I know finances is scary. I know the Fed said that they were going to raise interest rates and they didn't, and everybody freaked out on Wall Street. But the American public didn't care, so they were just like, whatever. And then over in Europe, they're like, well, we got negative interest rates. That's fine. Yeah, negative interest rates marks the end of an economy, people. If you study any economics, the fact that your money gets penalized by keeping it in a bank is disastrous. Disastrous. But anyway.
Disaster Japan.
Yeah. I mean, we're in a buku world of trouble here, people, and that's the reason there's MRAPs everywhere. That's the reason that people are being militarized everywhere, is because the financial backers of the world understand what's coming, and throughout the crisis, as we always say, and throughout this major crisis, they're going to have this great referendum and either introduce us to the SDR or some kind of, you know, quasi-gold, you know, precious metal-backed, you know, world currency nonsense that everybody's going to either have to take a chip or some kind of implant or something. Maybe they won't roll out the implants that fast because that's too, like, Matrix-like. But, you know, there's probably millions of people in America that would line up and get the chip tomorrow. So who knows?
Well, but, Jake, I mean, we actually covered this in kind of a haphazard manner.
Before the chip topics, I want to close out the Baltimore stuff with a quote from Mr. Michael Moore, Josh, that's going to make you go insane. All right, you ready? Michael Moore on Twitter today said, here's my demand. I want every African-American currently incarcerated for drug crimes or nonviolent offenses to be released from prison today. Okay, so you're halfway there. How about everyone incarcerated for nonviolent crimes, dumbass? Okay, so here's the one that's really good, Josh. You're going to love this one. Next demand, disarm the police. We have a $250 million Second Amendment guns in our homes for protection will survive until the right cops are hired. I could not believe that he actually wrote that.
That's quite shocking, to be honest.
Like, really? Hold on. You just said that we can fend for ourselves? No. That's a neoliberal. What happened? Did I just, like, end up on Mars all of a sudden? So, anyway, man, that's my last take on Baltimore. So, where did you go after that?
That quote actually brought to mind another quote that surfaced over the past week. Have you seen the vice president of the Orioles, his statement over the past couple days?
Yeah, he talked about it being a police state. The guy got a little ballsy.
Not only did he talk about it being a police state, but he says his major concern is, quote, an American political elite, which have shipped middle-class and working-class jobs away from Baltimore and cities and towns around the U.S. to third-world dictatorships like China and others, plunged tens of millions of good, hard-working Americans into economic devastation, and then followed that action around the nation by diminishing every American civil rights protections in order to control an unfairly impoverished population living in an ever-declining standard of living and suffering at the butt of an ever more militarized and aggressive surveillance state. But Jake, he also capped it off by saying, again, this is the...
Come on, dude.
You're telling me, but this is also...
from the 70s, and we could just freaking push him off to the side. He's a conspiracy theorist. It's fine.
It was a wonderful way to combat those critics of the Warren Commission report, and evidently it still works today. But he wrapped it up.
The American public doesn't read, to quote somebody.
Good old Alan Dulles. Gotta love him. But he capped it off by saying, Jake, and this is the owner of a baseball team. He says the innocent working families of all backgrounds whose lives and dreams have been cut short by excessive violence, surveillance, and other abuses of the Bill of Rights government pay the true price, an ultimate price, one that far exceeds the importance of any kids' game played tonight or ever at Camden Yards. And what are we always saying, Jake? You know, you can be a fan of sports, but ultimately these are grown-ass men playing children's games.
Yep, that's it, man. All right, so Diesel D, you can call back in if you want. We do have another caller on the line right here, so we're going to go to him and get his take on all this stuff. Caller, you are on the air. Welcome.
Hello, how you doing?
Hey, doing well, man. What's your name, and what did you want to talk about?
My name's Matt. I just wanted to say, great show. I agree a lot with what you're saying. I guess I had one quick, I know you were just wrapping up on Baltimore, but one quick curiosity on that, and then one larger point I was hoping to get your opinion on.
Yeah, go ahead.
In regards to Baltimore, I'm wondering if, I found myself, I'm not sure if it's a little bit impressed with the amount of bodies that it seems like, you know, the Black Lives Matter campaign, and I know it's, you know, fairly decentralized, but the amount of bodies that they've been able to put in the street and the, you know, disruptive nature, even with, you know, a lot of negative and, propagandized media coverage. But I'm a little bit impressed. It seems like it hit a little bit under the radar. I know what you said about the larger points of as far as militarization, but that was get y'all's opinions on that. But then secondly, I was going to go to a much larger point, but as far as economic independence, your thoughts on Bitcoin blockchain and facilitating that independence and kind of taking some power away from the Federal Reserve and national government.
That's a really good point. We'll address both of those. Well, I think what was interesting, I'm going to throw you back on mute here, man. We'll pull you back up if you want to make some points here in a second. I think what was really interesting is when you had the first few days of the riots, or what, not the riots, but you've had the first couple of days of protests, it was tens of thousands of people in Baltimore peacefully protesting. So as you're, and you know, to your point, you know, when the cameras turned, it's like, oh my God, look at all these people. Well, yeah, they already had tens of thousands of people there that were doing their thing peacefully and trying to get attention that way. And then once that kind of died down a little bit, then you had what seems to be to me, Josh, and I don't know about you, I don't know where you kind of stand on this. It seems to be provocateurs again coming in from outside the city, coming in to stir up. You know, and then once you see people, it's kind of the mob mentality takes over. Once some person, you know, throws a rock through a window, then somebody else is going to grab one, and now you're off to the races. And that person that initiated the actual violence or the actual ruckus can just kind of slip through the cracks and disappear. We've seen this at the G20, or was it the G8 that was in Seattle, where there were provocateur police. Oh, imagine that. Wardens of the state trying to foment stuff to go arrest people for protesting a gigantic criminal organization called the G8 or the G20, whichever one it was. I can't remember at this time.
It was in Vancouver, I believe, and I'm pretty sure it was the G20.
Oh, man. All right. Well, so I got half of it right.
But yeah,
I thought they had the mass roundup in Seattle as well. Now it's a moot point at this point. Gosh, sorry, I didn't mean to derail you. Go ahead.
Oh, don't sweat it. Yeah, I was actually looking into this earlier today, and because of course you can never really discount kind of agents provocateur being shipped in from elsewhere. If arrest statistics are to be any indicator of this. Of the 150-plus arrests that took place in Baltimore over the past week, only three of them were people who weren't from Baltimore zip codes. But, of course, if these were agents provocateur deliberately brought in by the state, of course, they probably wouldn't be arrested. So I don't know if that's really an accurate measure. To the caller's point about the Black Lives Matter campaign kind of beginning to reach critical mass, I guess no matter what what the political backdrop of that campaign reaching that mass is at this point, whether it's kind of, again, fomented by the state or if it's kind of these more organic events, I think it at least draws attention to essentially an issue that most Americans, specifically white Americans, just would either close their eyes to or wouldn't pay attention to at all. So at the very least, I can hope that, you know, maybe people will take a second look at this and say, you know, maybe I don't expect them to kind of dig deeper into the kind of neo-eugenics of this all, but maybe just to see the utter criminal police brutality that goes on, not just within our inner cities, but all across this country, and just hope that, you know, at the end of the day, this doesn't become sort of a race war that this is being kind of fomented into.
Well, I'm going to have to make you recite it again, Josh. What was the Schultz-Tenitsa quote again about the Russians?
Oh my goodness, that's a very long quote. But essentially, to paraphrase, the one about not loving liberty enough to stand up and defend it physically.
No, the other one where he talks about that they came for the Jews and I didn't care because I wasn't Jewish, and then
Nazi Germany, not yep. Solzhenitsyn. They came for the Catholics and I did not stand up for I was not Catholic, and then they came for the Jews and I did not stand up because I was not a Jew, and then they came for the Gypsies and I did not stand up for I was not a Gypsy, and then they came for me and no one was left to speak for me. But Jake, the caller also mentioned Bitcoin and blockchain technologies, which I know both of us have dipped our feet in those waters, and we both kind of have interesting opinions on those. So to that point, what do you have to say?
Well, I think that anything other than the Federal Reserve note, anything that takes a little bit of power away from the central bankers and the central control is a good idea. Now, the idea that it was sold upon us where it's this fully encrypted way to remove ourselves from the state and not have intervention or oversight through the banking cartel was, once again, a great idea, but it wasn't exactly what it was cracked up to be, because you and I both know, Josh, that any level of encryption, the NSA can go ahead and crack that. So it's not – I mean, the theory there is great. The idea of it being public – listen, I've said this before – if we were going to go to a society where everybody wore damn cameras and everything was encrypted, and only when you were put on trial was that data unencrypted, I would be all for that, because now nothing can be hidden. There is absolutely nothing that can be hidden. So I would be for that. It would be weird at first, but I think that would be a great way to combat a whole bunch of different corruption that goes on, a whole bunch of different crimes that go unsolved. So would I be for a total surveillance state? To an extent, absolutely to an extent. If everything was encrypted and everything was listen, I'm just going to go full technical on you here. This is in an ideal society, right? This is, we're not talking about the society we live in now where we have people that are just not the brightest. And it's, sorry, guys, you went through a public school education. Yeah, so just that's a big preface right there. So if we lived in a society that was where everybody understood that there is a possibility that anything that you do can be brought up against you at some point in time, I think that we would all be on our better behavior, but not in the way that we have it now, where everything is forced on us and you go to this mentality of picking up your cell phone and going, "Oh my God, is it listening to me? I don't know." Like, at least then we would all know, it's being recorded, but it's never going to be released unless somebody gets there and cracks it or whatever. So the idea of Bitcoin, the long-winded answer, the idea and the philosophy in Bitcoin, I agree with anything that takes the power away from the banking cartel and gives us some idea of individual liberty, and whether it's over your persons or effects or your property, which in this case would be your money. I would be all for that. Josh?
Yeah, I think that ultimately blockchain technology specifically can offer humanity and not just crypto anarchists, but people on kind of the currently within the mainstream nexus. It can offer humanity so many opportunities for freedom. But when I look at NSA whistleblowers like Bill Binney, who come out and say, well, to be honest, the NSA was freaked out about PGP for about 8 or 10 years, and then they cracked the crap out of it, and they didn't tell anyone that they cracked the crap out of it because they want people continuing to use it. AES 256, another very popular encryption protocol, another one that NSA loves people using because they've already essentially got it in their coffers. So I think that, a lot of the Bitcoin community is naive to think that SHA-256 does not also kind of fall under their umbrella. Now, that would be fine if we had a Bitcoin community that is more akin to what it was in the beginning, where it's very willing to change the protocol based on the changing times. But what we see instead is a Bitcoin foundation, which for the most part controls the code base. A large central mining conglomerate, the computers that kind of verify the entirety of the Bitcoin blockchain, who are so kind of induced by the profit motives that they don't really want to rock the boat on that front either. So no one's really willing to fix the inherent problems that are inherent within the Bitcoin protocol. And there are other altcoins that have kind of tried to fix those issues, but they're kind of thrown up by the wayside, largely because there's a lot of venture capital in Bitcoin now. A lot of it from groups that are not our friends. One of them, of course, being Blythe Masters, Jake, mm-hmm. The queen of what was it? In the 1990s, it worked for J.P. Morgan. She was the woman who headed the commodities fixing desk at J.P. Morgan, fixing the price of gold and silver since 2011. But she also brought us not high frequency trading algorithms. What are they?
Flash trades?
Not flash trades either. It's another financial algorithm or financial acronym that is escaping me right now. Not derivatives. Oh man, I'm drawing a blank.
Do you guys see why I left the technical discussion to Josh? Because all the after he said PGP, I kind of went blank. I think I blacked out a little bit.
I'm sorry, but yeah, because
we do have to have this discussion for people that that are really tied into the idea of it, because it is great. It's just the we kind of run into the same. Isn't it kind of the same problem, Josh? I mean, what you were just describing is kind of the same problem that we had with central banking to begin with. It's a great idea to let these people start printing money, which is in essence what you're doing when you're mining Bitcoin. Is you're basically printing money or currency, and then they're like, "Well, we don't want to do that because then it's going to cost us some money or some time, and every time we take away time, it's going to be costing us some money." So.
Bitcoin strikes me as, Jake, and if you disagree with this, feel free to chime in. It's almost like a decentralized greenback or a decentralized colonial scrip, which is a wonderful idea if you're willing to evolve it over time. But again, we have a Bitcoin foundation and a bunch of venture capitalists who are, come from pretty shady and seedy backgrounds, some of whom tied to the very globalist institutions that Bitcoin claims to fight. That really are not in a position to change anything at the moment. So to, I guess, put a cap on it, a wonderful idea up to this point, poor execution.
Yeah, and I also would say proceed with caution, because in a 2001 financial paper that J.P. Morgan Chase actually released a document that was very, very similar to the architecture of Bitcoin when they were thinking about doing encrypted currencies.
Default swaps. Sorry, Jake. Blythe Masters brought the world.
Oh, aren't those good, though? Those are nice.
And now she's got about $7 million sunk into her Bitcoin startup, so that's great.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, let me see this. So, caller, did we depress you enough? Sorry.
No, that's a lot of great thoughts. It definitely is. Specifically, just coming from my space, I haven't been in the Bitcoin space too long, but from a developer perspective, I was looking at the code base and I've seen the potential to kind of just insert small units of Bitcoin into the blockchain, but in doing so, managing other aspects, almost like a decentralized database application. And I was hoping that maybe we could redefine how value was used. And so it wasn't so much the value of the Bitcoin that could be used, but the public ledger aspect of the blockchain. And I know that doesn't, contradict.
No, that's very good.
So caller, are you referring to things like, the potential for smart contracts that currently exist in the blockchain?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm with you 100%, man. I mean, the future for that is so bright, and I just hope we don't screw it up.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. It seems that a lot of that is happening right down the road as far as Bitcore in Atlanta. And I know they've, received a lot of funding as well. But with the open source nature and the platforms that they're developing, seems like it's a better time than ever for that development to take place.
Well, I think that we're going to have alternatives in every way, shape, or form moving forward, because we all know that the dollar is a ticking time bomb. Just from the way that it's positioned, from the way that all the bets are hedged, and it just looks like the only thing backing up the dollar right now is American military might, and eventually that's gonna go away as well, because
maybe,
yeah, whatever. I mean, that's the scariest thing in the world, because yeah, we're the world reserve currency, but if our currency crashes, then what? You know, then we have this big financial reset, and then what happens? Then we're back to the days, and this is why Josh and I always get kind of scared when people start wanting a gold-backed currency. Well, yeah, how much gold do you have, asswipe? I don't have a bunch. I mean, there's not a lot of people. I know George Soros has got a ton. I know that, like, large institutions that have a bunch. China's got a bunch. Russia does. But I don't. So, I mean, that doesn't leave a lot of room for the little guy. And I think, to your point, caller, this is a anything as an alternative to the Fed, I'm all for. And the idea of smart contracts is absolutely fabulous, because then there's no discrepancies, and then you get to cut out the banking institution altogether, which, you know, takes their 5% or whatever for the transaction, just for being the intermediary or the holder of the contract. So I think that's a very good way to go.
So, caller, I hate to take up any more of your valuable time, but given that you're more of a developer, while we have you on the line here, have you investigated side chains at all? And how does that work into kind of the vision of the future that you see, if at all?
Yeah, so absolutely. You know, I'm wading into it. You know, it seems as though it's a very, you know, deep sea. But I've looked into Ethereum and Ripple, which to my knowledge are side chains, and yeah, it seems it's a lot to wrap my head around, but the potential seems incredible. I like developing on the original Bitcoin code. Seems a little bit more agile, but it does seem to be that side chains are the future.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And as a quick suggestion, I would check out Dash if you get the chance. Interesting coin. Don't know exactly what its future is, but it's based on the Bitcoin Core protocol, and it kind of has an interesting mechanism of obfuscating your transactions on the blockchain, should you desire to do so. It's not kind of enabled by default, but in my mind, it kind of takes out you know, one of the core flaws of the Bitcoin protocol, in that, you know, its greatest strength and its greatest weakness, sort of, that everything is always open, you know?
Okay, definitely. I appreciate that.
And Josh, didn't you bring that up on a show like over a year ago?
Yeah. Back then, I believe it was called Dark Coin. Still,
it was called Dark Coin. Okay, yeah. My lord. See, just pay attention, people. We're gonna drop some knowledge on you every once in a while, and typically it's at the end of the show, so we're gonna make you listen the whole time. So we got about two more minutes. Josh, any final thoughts for everybody? Wait. We got to cover Jade Helm. All right. So let me explain to everybody before you freak out what Jade Helm is. Jade Helm is just your average run-of-the-mill exercise that is done by the U.S. military, and they usually do it on private property outside in, like, Alaska. For people like the Airborne Rangers, they train in Alaska and, like, up in Montana. So they're doing it in an environment, once again, look where they train, and that's what they're looking to fight. So if they're doing it in an environment like Texas, if they're doing it in Arizona, where do you think that they're, or in Southern California, where do you think that they're going to be? They are not going to be in suburban America. So this idea that we're going to have this martial law and it's acclimation for getting troops, for getting people acclimated to troops on the street is a little bit silly. And I hate to say that like that, because I followed Alex Jones for a long time, and I thought he had a lot of good info, until I realized that that he thinks about these strategies about 20 years too soon. So I really don't think that the government is coming to get us, especially with the technology of the internet and the amount of people that have been sharing the information about Jade Helm. And don't listen to the girl, Josh, because she's going to tell us we got like 60 seconds left or whatever. But we're going to run over. Because when I was looking at all the different documentation that I could find on Jade Helm, what struck me the most was this article that came out of the Houston Chronicle. And yeah, it's probably a little bit of a whitewash. And yeah, they're going to have some other, you know, verbiage in there to calm people down. But at the end of the day, when you look at what this exercise is, and people talking about how these exercises have been public for over a year, when they're talking about doing this, So the fact that Alex Jones picked it up, ran through all this stuff, and decides that this is going to be another operation to get you to buy stuff and to get you to listen to him, is really kind of, it's kind of silly. Josh, are you still there? Did we put you on hold or what?
Oh, no, I'm still with you, buddy.
Okay, great. So hold on. I just wanted to find one more. I got kind of knocked off by this. Okay, so here is the important part of the article that Alex Jones omits, where he talks about they're going to be interacting with the public. They're going to be in plain clothes. Here's what he says. Special ops have worked for years and trained in trained off post for years and go out of their way to find folks as role players out in the economy, he said, after 21 years of Army intelligence. He says they have a scenario they'll be following and they'll interact with these role players as if they are in another country. So, Alex, they're not going around poking people in downtown Texas and going, hey, man, do you know where the bombs are? Do you know where this is? I mean, it's really, really sad, and I really hate that they're making such a big hubbub over this thing. But hey, if we get overthrown and they declare martial law, then you guys can, you know, say I told you so. But I just see it as another way for the military to spend a bunch of money and to, you know, fly around like they always do. My dad used to talk to me about training missions that they would do when he was in the Air Force for years. So this is nothing new under the sun. It's just, it's been made a lot more public now than it probably ever should have been. But, you know, whatever. Age of the internet, everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. But just to kind of, I guess, put an end on this discussion as well. Because the thing that you hear cited so often within alternative media circles is, well, you know, they go live with these drills like the Boston bombing and 9/11, and that's why we need to be vigilant about Jade Helm.
Yeah. Okay. So they made 9/11 public, and they made the Boston bombing public.
Yeah. Exactly. To which you a sane person would respond, well, this Jade Helm document has essentially been, you know, in the public record since its inception. You know, Alex Jones essentially and InfoWars pulled it off of a public database, public military database. It was available to the public if you wanted to go and see that this was going on. When you look at something like the Able Danger document trail post 9/11, that took years to assemble through the work of brave researchers and whistleblowers, because none of that information was in the public domain. Researchers had to piece it together themselves, at which point the government finally came out and said, well, yeah, there was this Able Danger program, and yeah, maybe it had something to do with these drills that kind of look like exactly what was going on in the skies that day over New York. But, you know, never mind that, because it's not important, because it's not in the 9/11 Commission report. But, the point being, if this truly were a martial law takeover with 1,455 troops for five states, they probably wouldn't take or tell you about it ahead of time, and they'd probably use a few more people than just under 1,500.
And odds are they would probably use foreign troops as well.
Indeed.
So, there you go. So everybody, sleep well in Texas. The government's not coming to get you yet, but if they crash the currency, all bets are off. So that's it for the show. Thanks to the caller. Sorry for Diesel D that you weren't able to get in and you didn't call back. So evidently we said something you didn't like. But that's it for the show. Josh, any parting words for everybody after we wrapped up? That was a great wrap-up on Jade Helm. That was all of a minute and 30 seconds. Get some.
Indeed. No, it was a great show tonight, Jake, and great caller, too. I wish we had more of those, you know, more callers like that.
Actually, do know that caller, so I will schedule him a time for us to come on, and we will nerd out for everybody. So
awesome.
Yeah, that'll be some big nerd time. We will lose all of our subscribers, but guess what? We are not about making money. We're not about funding an operation. We're not about selling you any kind of colloidal silver or anything you can make in your house. We are here to give you a different side of the story, and by God, we might actually be here to promote you to get involved in your local community, read books, and there's another one, read books. How about this? Gather information for yourself, decipher it, chew it up, formulate your own opinion, and then someday you may be right. Thanks to my guest, Josh Wiley. Thanks to the caller, Matt, for calling in. Thanks again for listening to We Are Not Cattle Radio. Peace, love, and liberty, everyone. Take it easy. That I did.